All right, hey, it's been too long. One of the best out there, Dave Bartu. You know him probably best as a CFB Matrix, Matrix Analytical. Anything else we left off the title there, Dave?
No, that's about it. I'm just a dude that likes to tell stories with numbers in football.
Yeah, and you know, we've had you on the show a number of times. I know you do radio and podcasts all across the Southeast and really the country, explaining what you do. But our audience always gets bigger and bigger. There's probably a lot of people that are unfamiliar with your work. Can you kind of explain what it is that Matrix Analytical does?
We started, my team started about 8 years ago, and our focus in the data was on off-field analytics. So the first thing that we started working on was coaching, and we have built coaching staffs all over the country, including the SEC. We do more work in the SEC than anywhere else, and I really do believe it's because the SEC is constantly looking for an edge, you know, at every single level. And so our first clients, you know, were in the SEC, and that has continued to grow. But we focus on staff building. We have our system has every guy to wear a headset, right? So whether it's offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, wide receiver coaches, you name it, we have a grade and a year-by-year profile on their entire career. So what we're looking for there is highs and lows, windows and floors of the ceiling and the floor of every guy. We took that to the NFL. I just on my NFL AI account at Matrix Edge AI, I just posted an article on Raheem Morris. So if you're out there and you're an NFL fan and you want your defense to regress, Raheem Morris is your man. And then in the last couple of years, we worked the NFL backward. 3 years ago, we started a project in the NFL on athleticism identification. And we were able to show through kinematics how it highly correlated with success at the NFL. We modified it for college and high school and middle school. And right now, go Gamecocks. Right now, we're in South Carolina doing advanced player identification scouting with the Garnet Trust. We've been NCAA approved. We're the only advanced scouting analytics firm out there with NCAA approval for finding players. So it's an exciting time from a data standpoint for us.
Yeah. And so you said a lot there, Dave, but again, if you get a sense of everything you just said there, my favorite thing about you is it's not like, oh, this is just a guy that hates insert Tennessee, or he's a Bama lover. Like so many of us, like we're all biased, right? To some degree. And I'm fine with that. Hey, I went to Tennessee. I'm not a cheerleader for him, but I don't want him to suck either. But your thing is just looking at all this via numbers and how that correlates to the game. And I feel like that is incredibly valuable because that's a good way to kind of evaluate these players, these coaches with a less biased view, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. You know, don't mind my Tennessee orange wall or my duck jacket or anything like that. But, you know, with the data, we're just telling stories with numbers. It's not a personal opinion. It's not subjective. I don't try to be subjective. I try to be unemotional with it. And honestly, I will admit I am much more negative because being negative is usually more right. You know, I mean, fans get over their skis, but also in my business, head coaches and coaches in general are wired to win, Michael. They're wired to win, and they're always looking upside. Negativity doesn't cross their mind. They think they're going to win every game. They're going to cover every spread. That is how they have to go about doing it because the job is that intense. But in that process, psychologically, they forget to look at the floor. They forget to look at the risk, okay? And so, great example, that Georgia-Ole Miss game when Kirby went for it on fourth down inside of his 50, right? From a percentage standpoint of getting it, it was less than 50%, okay? But that's a downside. But the other downside that wasn't considered is that Ole Miss had just scored. If you don't make it, you're giving them a short field. And if they convert that into a touchdown, Ole Miss is going to hit the highest momentum index in the game. And if you hit the highest momentum index in the game since 2010, 16 years at the FBS level, you win 91% of all FBS football games. It's stronger than winning the turnover battle. So there was so much more at stake on the downside than the upside of that single play. Everybody talks about that third and goal rush, don't rush. No, the play of the game was going for it inside the 50 because the downside risk was tremendous. So that's one of the things that you'll get even when you and I are talking. I'm always looking at the downside. So a lot of people see that as negative. I'm just trying to be realistic to paint that picture of this is your ceiling, this is your floor. You got to be scared of this because this can get you fired.
Well, I don't mind the negatives, just so you aware. So be as negative as you want, when particularly, because I heard you reference this before. So I really wanted to ask you about Steve Sarkisian and the job he's doing at Texas. And now he's got kind of all chips on the table, I would think, by replacing Pete Bukowski. I think I butchered it. I always butcher his name.
You did. That's cool.
With Will Muschamp. So kind of two questions in one there. Steve Sarkisian, how does he grade out as a head coach of Texas? And what are your thoughts on replacing this defensive coordinator with Will Muschamp?
Well, okay, we'll start with Steve. And I've been saying this for a long time. The minute he got that job, the minute he gets any head coaching job, he underperforms the talent. He's not going to win a national championship at Texas. He's not a good head coach relative to the talent. He's only had 1 year in his entire career where he overperformed the talent he's had versus the schedule. One. Okay. That was 2 years ago. And he's never been able to replicate that since. So I do not feel he is a national championship level head coach. Never have, probably never will. I figure if he gets there, I think it's going to be more lucky than good, and the pieces kind of all fell into place. His grade right now, all active head coaches with more than 4 years of experience, he is 43rd in the country.
Wow.
43rd. Okay. Not great. Okay. That doesn't include guys with 3 years or 2 years or 1 years of experience. That's 43rd out of that class. So as long as he's there, national championship level money, national championship level talent, not going to win it. Now with Pete Kwiatkowski has been carrying the Longhorns for the last 3 years. The offense for Steve Sarkisian. Now, Steve, in our system, he is a five-star offensive coordinator. This guy can put up huge numbers, and he has throughout his career. He's a good offensive coordinator, poor head coach. But the offense at Texas has regressed for three straight years. Boom, boom, boom. It keeps dropping. What has held it up is that defense. Pete Kwiatkowski has done it at three places. He has had a top five scoring efficiency defense at Boise, at Washington, and at Texas. And he got fired for a guy who hasn't called plays in a decade. Sure, that's going to work out great. I'm totally on board with that. No, I'm fading Sarkisian more than ever right now. This is Dabo level of grasping at straws, bringing back a guy that had ties to the program. I don't believe this is an improvement at all. And there's going to be a lot of growing pains here. The plus side is if you get your quarterback back at Texas, you got a really good offensive coordinator and you got a good learning growth curve for the offense. The offense should be remarkably better, but I don't feel that this is an upgrade at all for the Texas Longhorns on the defensive side. Now that Pete's gone, my prayer is that he hooks up with Lincoln Riley at USC, because I would love to see the Riley OC, who's every bit as good as Steve Sarkisian, and the Pete Kwiatkowski dynamic in the Big Ten.
Hey, you hit on something there that I think you were quite literally the person that introduced me to this. So I love the scoring efficiency. Now, as you have explained it to me, it's how many offensive snaps that a team has and how many points are they scoring, and virtually the exact same for defense. How many snaps you're facing on defense, how many points you've given up. And one of the only critique that I hear from fans, because I reference this all the time, why the hell does that matter when Indiana's not playing anybody? While we in the SEC are playing this gauntlet, you know, or we're playing, you know, a cupcake school, why is this valuable when there is no schedules that are uniform?
Well, number one, it is the single most important number in terms of quality of offense and quality of defense in college football and in the NFL. It works for both. Now, there's two ways to look at it. The very simple math for everybody listening is simply points per play. Okay, when that ball is snapped offensively, how many points are you expected to score? How many points is that defense expect to give up? It's kind of a modified margin of victory. That is football, because when you look at the scoreboard, everybody talks about it's not a yards board, it's a scoreboard, right? And there's only 24 important numbers at the end of the year, right? Home and road. That's it. 12 times 2 is 24. That's it. Everything else pours into those scoring numbers, and putting a touchdown up is just as important as keeping a touchdown off of that scoreboard. So when you're looking at that, that's the simple way. Now, our advanced modification of it is percentage over opponent. Okay, so you can look at the strength of your average defense faced and modify that relative to the average offense. So you may have a number one offense, but you know, if you've faced the Buffalo Bulls for 12 games, you know, your numbers may not look as good. And the reason it's really important when it ties to national championships, and that might get broken this year, we're on 26 consecutive years of a team in the top three, not top five, not top 10, top three offense and or defensive scoring efficiency has won a national title. We only have one of those left. That is Indiana. If Indiana wins out, and I think you and I both expect them to do, that'll be 27 consecutive years of a top three offense and or a top three scoring efficiency defense winning it all. So it's really, really an important number, NFL and college football. I won't get into NFL playoffs. That might be for breaking down another segment altogether, but it is the strongest correlation that we have to winning and losing in season.
Okay.
In a single metric.
Yeah, so it's an incredibly valuable statistic for determining who's elite, and that's why I like it. But again, credit you for kind of teaching me about that. Can you teach us a little bit about Lane Kiffin at LSU? I think we kind of, you know, we're all pretty familiar with him and what he's capable of doing, but what is his coaching grade as he enters LSU?
Well, he's top five head coach, active head coach in college football right now. I mean, he's probably the best on paper, right? If you look at the numbers, really the only guy to go from one side of the ledger, bad, to the other side of the ledger, really good. Most of the time you'll get a coach that is good, tends to stay good, bad, tends to stay bad. Look at Steve Sarkisian. Always underperforms the talent. We can count on that, right? And with Lane, we couldn't count on that. But then he turned it around at FAU, increased their recruiting. He cycled through coaches. He kept winning. The offense and defensive scoring efficiency were both really good. And then at Ole Miss, at the time, it felt like a much more emotional hire. People were just excited about it because of the name and the presence he brought. But I don't think a lot of people were realizing the change that had happened at FAU. My concern was, are we going to get old Lane or are we going to get new Lane? Obviously, we got new Lane. And he was there for what, 5 years at Ole Miss? And I think with the transition to NIL, it became a more pro-like model. His experience in the NFL, I think all of these things made a perfect storm for him to be very, very successful. So will he be as equally successful at LSU? I don't know, right? I mean, that's a hiring risk. We don't know which way that's going to go. But in terms of risk relative to the hire, he was the best guy available, and they went out and got him. I think one of the hidden benefits of all this, though, is that continuity. If you look at the playoff teams, there's a lot of player and coaching continuity. Oregon's entire coaching staff has been together for 3 years. Indiana's has been together for 5, 6, 7 years. Okay. Oregon's players have been around a long time. They're too deep. Indiana, they're too deep. Miami, they're too deep. Miami's staff hasn't turned over very much. Ole Miss, I know everybody's talking about Pete Golding, but up until this week, there was almost no staffing turnover there as well. So when I look at LSU, I think, yes, they took the best risk they could in Lane Kiffin. He's a top five offensive coordinator as well as a top five head coach, but he gets to keep Baker and that staff. That LSU defense was top 10 in scoring efficiency at some point in this season. I think that LSU can turn it around really quick because of that continuity that they've had in the transition between Lane and being able to keep that defense in Baton Rouge.
And how is that pairing? Because that's another thing that I picked up from you that I never really thought of before, but it's not just, you know, you want to have the, you know, on paper, you want to have the best offensive coordinator, the best defensive coordinator. That's the best staff you can have, right? Well, not necessarily, but based on the pairings and how one does against, you know, how many snaps they're facing. How does that all work? And how does that pairing with Kiffin and Blake Baker, is that a good pairing for LSU, you think?
It appears to be. But speaking of pairing, for in a few minutes on your show, let's put a pin in Ole Miss. That's a pairing I really want to talk about. But with LSU, with Baker, he's been very successful with a lower pace of play. Now, the great thing with Kiffin is that his pace of play, he doesn't have just a fastball, right? He can slow it down. He takes the air out. He can run the football. So Lane, part of being a great, it's like being a great starter in Major League Baseball. How many pitches do you have? Okay, as an offensive coordinator, like a Larry Fedora, he had one pitch. It was go fast, okay? Killed his defense. Lane can pick it up. He can slow it down. Lane and Cignetti and Ryan Day handle game momentum. Those are your top three guys that utilize timeouts to handle game momentum, both with timeouts and with pace of play. So I think it's going to be okay. There might be a few growing pains because Lane does like to pick it up, and Baker really hasn't had to deal with a high pace of play, a high snap count in his career so far.
Well, yeah, well, let's go to Ole Miss then next, because I don't know how close you've been paying attention, Dave, but I think Pete Golding could be mayor of Oxford if he ran for it right now. They love his ass. He's doing all the right things. They're winning, obviously, in the playoff. They're keeping all their players. But something tells me you're not a huge fan of their new offensive coordinator. What is it? John David Baker, I believe, is his name.
John David Baker. Yes. Well, it's not necessarily a huge fan. It's just the concern. This is a risk hire, right? Pete's doing a great job, but let's not get too far over our skis. I watched Mark Helfrich take the Ducks to a national championship in his first year. 4 years later, he was fired because it regressed to that point. So that's why we don't grade guys in full after 12 games. But kudos to Pete for holding it together. It's a great story. Still hope Miami beat your ass. With John David Baker, you have a guy that is top three in pace of play. This guy is going to force 75 to 80 plays per game on the Ole Miss defense. That is not what Pete is used to. He's been at Alabama. He's been with Lane. He is used to 61 to 67 plays a game. John David Baker is going to push one, maybe two more drives per game at his current pace of play. And with his pace of play, the faster he goes, the worse he gets. His first year at East Carolina, he was a little bit slower. He had excellent scoring efficiency. The next year, he went really fast. I think he was number one or number two in pace of play in the FBS. This year, scoring efficiency took a huge dip. So for John David Baker, I think for him to be successful, he needs to slow it down. And I think there's going to be some tremendous growing pains between what Pete Golding and his defense is used to relative to John David Baker and what John David Baker wants to do. I think it's the toughest new pairing in the SEC this year to try to marry up in 2026.
And then do you have any thoughts on that? They just announced this hire, so it may have, like, literally right before we hopped on here, so it may have not been on your radar just yet, but they hired defensive coordinator Patrick Toney, who he was at Florida under Billy Napier, and then he went to the NFL. I think he's been in the NFL since then. Any thoughts on that defensive coordinator hire for Pete Golding?
Yeah, no, Patrick is really solid. He in his early career, we had him on the board as a real rising star. There's a lot of potential with that guy. He's put up good numbers in his career, still very young relative to how much horizon he has to be a defensive coordinator. So overall, from a risk standpoint, given his background, given what Pete Golding has as a defensive coordinator background, which is elite, I like that hire a lot. I think there's a lot of potential there. But again, this is a guy that is not used to up-tempo offense, right? This is, he has high potential as a defensive coordinator on his own, but I think that growing pain between Tony and Golding and John David Baker, that's something to keep an eye on in September. How fast are they trying to go? I think it could be to their detriment trying to run fastball only too soon when they're putting this whole thing together.
So, hey, so he was at Florida there briefly. So let's transition to Gainesville. New coach John Sumrall, and you know, universally praised for hiring offensive coordinator Buster Faulkner. What does the Matrix say about Sumrall and Buster?
Buster is a safe hire. When you look at his career, over his career, remember what I talked about at the beginning, the floor, okay? Buster doesn't really lay clunkers. Buster doesn't get you fired. Generally, his numbers have always been average to above average for a floor. So from that standpoint, from a John Sumrall standpoint, that is a safe, good hire. Now, has Faulkner put up an elite offense? Nope, never has. He's never had. He doesn't have a high ceiling. So his floor and ceiling are very close together, you know, average to very above average, but he's never popped that elite season in college football, in spite of it being at several places. His most recent success has been at Georgia Tech, but that's also been with a pretty decent quarterback. So I like the safety of the hire. I just don't think the Florida offense is going to be elite underneath him for at least a couple of years till he gets his feet under him in Gainesville.
Mm-hmm. And then John Sumrall, I mean, he's comes with universal praise. He's been at Troy, turned them into a winner overnight. Tulane, he got them to the playoff. What does the Matrix say about Sumrall?
Really good ceiling on this guy. That was the second best guy available, in our opinion, in the numbers. And now a lot of people try to tie him into, well, that's just Billy Napier all over again. Let me introduce you to a new word that I want you and all of your watchers and listeners to think about. The word is portable. Okay, this is something my co-founder Adam came up with earlier this year when we started the coaching carousel. Portable is the ability to do it at more than one place effectively. Okay, Billy Napier, we didn't know if he was portable because he did a great job at Louisiana. In fact, he did a fantastic job at Louisiana. If you pull up Louisiana's numbers when he was there, and you just put names and everything aside, and you go, damn, offensively, damn, defensively, son of a, you know, I mean, he had a great run, but he only did it at Louisiana. The thing that I really like about Sumrall in relation to that is he is portable. He did it at Troy. He turned the defense around fast. Offense, not so much. He's a defense first guy. He's a former linebacker at Kentucky, so obviously defense first. But he turned around at Troy, then he maintained it for Willie Fritz. Remember, he took over for Willie Fritz, and Willie Fritz, another one of the guys that I've been working with since he was at Tulane, really damn good head coach, right? He was able to maintain it. Tulane wasn't that much better under Sumrall, but it didn't regress. So we have what I feel is portability in Sumrall as one of the first big differentials between Sumrall G5 and Napier G5.
Interesting. So, all right, how portable is the success that Alex Golish had at South Florida now that he's trying to transition that to Auburn and he's keeping DJ Durkin as defensive coordinator?
Ooh, baby, I love this one, right? Because he hasn't proven to be portable, has he? He's not been a head coach anywhere else, right? And what you call success, I call pretty average. Okay, you have some recency bias, brother. Okay, and look, an average head coach was expected to go 9-3 at South Florida this year. Average. Okay, he didn't win above expectations. The previous year, he was 3 games below expectations. The year before that, he was 3 games below expectations. So you and anybody else that is going, woo, Alex Golish, below average head coach for 3 years with one good 12 game run as an offensive coordinator for South Florida. And we don't know if it's portable or not. Now, you mentioned DJ Durkin. Oh, baby. This is a situation. I never realized this situation until about 3 years ago. And when we started working for Miami Building Staffs with Mario, when he hired Charlie Strong, I don't know if you remember this, he hired Charlie Strong as a linebacker coach. Okay. And when that happened, number one, Charlie Strong is not a good coach at anything. Okay. So I wasn't really a big fan of it on paper. It was more of a name hire, but that's another story altogether. But we didn't realize this until afterward. Charlie Strong is a former head coach, and all former head coaches want to do one thing: become a head coach. Okay. That's what they're working on. Okay. DJ Durkin is a former head coach. I promise you, he wants to be a head coach again. Okay. And with Charlie Strong at linebacker coach, at the point he didn't think he'd become a DC, because he had to become the DC in order to become a head coach again. So you got this old lion in the cave, and you and I both know you can't have two big old lion, male lions in the same cave in Africa, right? Doesn't work, right? One of them's going to kill each other. So in Miami, you got lions in the cave. And when Strong didn't see that he had a path to become a head coach, that's when culture could start falling apart. So DJ Durkin, I promise you, DJ thinks he's a better head coach than Alex Golish. And I think he is too. So this is a delicate balance. I know they wanted to keep DJ, but they didn't keep the rest of the staff, I don't believe. And so now you're asking an old male lion who thinks he's better than the new male lion to get along with him in the cave. Woo! Baby, if there's going to be a soap opera in coaching in the SEC this year, I think it's that one. The other one to look out for is Will Muschamp undermining Steve Sarkisian. He brought in an old lion who wants to be a head coach again. That is playing with fire, my friend.
Right. Well, story goes, you know, John Summerall was eyeing that Auburn job, and there's a reason he didn't. And you about hit the nail on the head there. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. All right. Well, speaking of another one that the Matrix, questionable, Kentucky. Well, I don't think we're questioning Will Stein. I know you're familiar with him, offensive coordinator, but never been a head coach. I always say don't hire someone that's not been a head coach, not in this conference, but you know, we're seeing at Mississippi State. I think the guy's a hell of a quarterback coach and a good offensive coordinator, in my opinion, but he's learning on the job, and it shows every Saturday. What's your thoughts on Will Stein and the staff he's put together there with the coordinators?
Well, Will Stein has no shortage of self-confidence. You know, remember what I talked about before, guys that think they're going 12-0? Will Stein, he is a 12-0 guy, man. It is win, 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 win. I think it is going to be very different. I like the hire because I thought, okay, he's going to come in, he's going to be a CEO, and he's going to call the plays. Okay, because he's been an elite play caller. And I know a lot of people go, well, Dave, he's just been at Oregon with transfer quarterbacks. Not so fast, my friend. UTSA, he turned that offense around overnight his first year, and it was top 25 in the country in 1 year. So this guy is portable and has a lot of skills. But then he went and hired Joe Sloan. And then he went and hired Jay Bateman. And Jay Bateman and Joe Sloan, by the numbers, that's the worst offensive-defensive coordinator pairing in the SEC. There. Said it. Right? I think Will Stein has upper-level ability to run an offense. I think he should be carrying the offense at least for the first year to give them a shot. I think if it's left up to Sloan and Bateman, it's going to be really tough to win football games in the SEC when you're not only out-athleticized in every game, you are literally being out-coached in every single game.
Yeah. I mean, you just nailed it, because I was going to say, I don't think you could get away with that at Georgia, having the worst coordinator, but you could win some games. It's compounded on itself how difficult he's making it at Kentucky, where virtually every time they see the field in the conference, they're going to be overmatched talent wise. Now, I don't know. That's a head scratcher.
Yeah, coaching and talent wise, they're going to be now. Now Indiana is showing us that, look, you can be a mid-30s recruiter and win all your football games, right? And for everybody that goes, oh, well, look at their schedule. Shut up. Really, shut up. You're stupid if you think the schedule is that important. You know what the strength of schedule record is in the playoffs so far? 3-5. The team with the tougher strength of schedule has 5 losses. Okay. And when you look at the numbers, they beat the crap out of Oregon and Oregon. They beat the crap out of Ohio State. And guess what? That schedule keeps them healthy. That's one of the things that people are not talking about with the SEC going to 9 games. I've done the research. I have 15 years of injury research in the NFL and college football, actually 16 from 2010 forward. The highest rate of starts lost to injury in college football is in the SEC. Okay. Every time the ball is snapped, somebody in the SEC is more likely to get injured and lose a start than anywhere else in the country. Number 2 is the Big Ten. Now, the Big Ten is doing that with 9 games. The SEC is doing that with 8 conference games. And when you look at the rosters and you look at all the numbers, it's really simple. Force equals mass times acceleration. Top to bottom, the SEC has an average bigger player and an average faster player. Win or lose, the physicality indexes, the SEC is brutal compared to the rest of them. Now you're going to 9 games. You're going to get more guys hurt. You're going to lose more starts. Those guys at the bottom are going to have a much more difficult time, not just winning games, but staying healthy. Watch as this goes forward. You are going to see more starts lost in the SEC than anywhere else in the country. And it's going to be subtle because there's so many players in so many games. But everybody listening, you watch that injury rate when you start getting into November. Watch it climb, because I think that's going to be a significant part of this 9-game schedule.
Not only 9 games, Dave. Like this year, there's 2 bye weeks for the SEC. I don't know, for everybody, I assume, but two bye weeks for everybody in the SEC. Next year, just 1. So I hate that. I think they got to mandate double byes.
Yeah, quit being a baby. Everybody's on the same schedule. God.
Hey, that's why we're losing. Huh? That's why the SEC's losing.
That's an
Dave.
SEC fan for you right there. Just keep moving those goalposts, buddy. You keep moving those goalposts.
That's why we're struggling in the playoff, because the schedules are
gotten. That's why you have no continuity. I think your biggest difficulty is you don't have continuity amongst players. Players are constantly transferring the SEC because there's so much money down there. I think you're struggling with the continuity standpoint, and nobody's really good at anything. You only had 2 top 10 units in the entire country this year with 8 conference games. Okay, you had a top 10 scoring efficiency defense at Oklahoma. You had a top 10 scoring efficiency offense at Vanderbilt. Nobody else is there, right? Everybody's bitching about Mike Bobo. Dude. They Georgia hasn't had a top 25 scoring efficiency defense for 3 years, right? I mean, you look across the board and there's like these teams would get absolutely smoked by old LSU, Alabama, Georgia teams of just a few years ago. So I think one of the biggest issues in the SEC is players moving around in the country far too much. I think focusing on continuity, and we're only 2 years into the data research, but I think that's something that going forward, watch the continuity of your 2 deep. I think that is very, very important to be able to have a strategy to maintain that.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, hey, the only other new coach in the SEC, we got Ryan Silverfield at Arkansas. What does the matrix say about his track record? And he got offensive coordinator Tim Kramsey and defensive coordinator Ron Roberts.
Yeah, you know, man, is there a crappier job in college football than Arkansas? I mean, I get the pay. A lot of fans be like, what are you talking about, Dave? Look how much you're getting paid. But in terms of quality of player, money available, schedule, and demands from the fans, it might be the toughest job in college football. Now, if I told you, Michael, that Team X just hired a guy to run a team that has bottom 3 talent and is coming from a team that had number 1 talent in their conference but never won a conference title, how would you feel about that?
Good luck.
So we don't need to answer this question anymore, do we? So good luck. I also ran the numbers on Arkansas's everybody's 9-game schedule, trying to look at quality of offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, estimated quality of performance, and estimated quality of athleticism and athlete. Arkansas has the toughest in-conference schedule over the next 4 years. Toughest one, right? They got bottom three talent. They don't have, they could have a lot of money, but they don't. Tim Kramsey is an excellent offensive coordinator. He has absolutely carried Memphis, and it drives me nuts he's not at a bigger, better school calling plays. Ron Roberts, middle of the road. He's had some really high ceilings. He's had some really low floors, overall, slightly above average. But this is a team that is projected to, you know, average wins is going to be about 4 per year. I think Ryan Silverfield would be doing a great job if he pops bowl eligibility once in the next 4 years. It's going to be that tough in Arkansas with 9 games in the schedule.
Damn. Okay. Well, I would ask you out the door a couple coordinators that are big time here for these fan bases. Let's start with Tennessee. Defensive coordinator Jim Knowles.
You had to go to Tennessee. I knew it. I knew it. Oh, man, Jim Knowles. I don't think he's as good as you think he is. I don't. He needs a long runway. When he got hired by Ohio State, I think you can actually look in Twitter. I said he can win a national championship here. It's going to take at least 3 years for him to ramp up his defense. It's very, very complicated. People will go back to, well, Oklahoma State, he had an elite defense. Yeah, it took 6 years, and it was post-COVID, and he had like 64 guys that were 6th- and 7th-year seniors. I mean, even BYU was jealous of how old their players were at Oklahoma State. So, and then at Penn State, that wasn't a good defense last year. So I'd say to Tennessee fans, pump the breaks. He can be good, but he has to have very elite talent. He has to have veteran talent, and it usually takes 3 to 4 years to ramp it up. If he has a top 25 defense this year, I think he's doing a job that is above his career norms. There's a lot of promise, but I think you got to be patient and trying to get there in 2028, 2029.
Yeah, well, Tennessee's used to shitty defense, so I think they'll be fine.
Oh, shut up, dude. The defense carried this team 2 years ago, and 3 years ago. The offense was garbage. Shut up. Oh, my God.
We turned the page on that.
Oh, man, you and your selection bias. One bad year. Get out of here.
All right, hey, how about another one? I know this is we've talked about this off air, but A&M. Making the decision to go from Colin Klein to Holloman Wiggins. I mean, I don't know that there's even data on him as a play caller.
No, there's not, right? I feel sorry for Wiggins. I mean, A&M just posted their best scoring efficiency of the last 25 years. And you're asking a guy, I mean, you'd want to talk about getting thrown in the fire. This is a playoff team that lost one game with the best offense they've had in 25 years. And a guy that's never called plays before is now in charge of it. That is a big ask. That is a really big ask. Look, Wiggins is an outstanding unit coach. He is a very, very smart football coach. But I don't think you can even come close to expecting what A&M did this year to carry over to next year. Transitive math in coaching and in college and the NFL doesn't exist. So I think that is going to be really, really tough. Defensively, well, they're going to have to get better. That was the worst defense in the playoffs. It was one of the worst defenses in the SEC. So I can only think that the defense is going to be significantly upgraded, but I think the offense just has to fall back at least for a year with an inexperienced guy at the head of calling the offensive plays.
To your knowledge, and maybe this is just something that's impossible to track, I don't know, but is there any history of a guy doing this where no play calling and then he can kind of be an improvement over a very solid play caller?
Oh, God. You're trying to improve an elite scoring efficiency offense. It's going to be tough, right? I mean, it's really going to be tough. I'm sure there's instances of it where guys have put, you know, progressed an already elite offense or an already elite defense forward. But I don't know if that is in so much as the quality of the coach or the continuity of the players. So, I mean, my follow-up question, like on A&M, is on that offense, who's coming back? You getting all 11 back? You getting 4? I think that is a bigger barometer of what's going to happen in 2026 versus Wiggins taking over.
Well, they're replacing the entire offensive line, their best receiver. No. So, yeah, it's going to be difficult. All right, hey, you got your Carolina hat on, so I got to ask you about new offensive coordinator Kendall Briles. What thoughts on him pairing with Clayton White, a defensive coordinator? That's, I would think, a very strong coordinator duo.
It is. You know, again, biased towards South Carolina, but I think their hiring process was really good risks. What I like about Briles is that he has instant impact. We talked about portability. Briles has proven to be extremely portable for his offense. And it looks like Sellers is coming back. So you got a mobile, strong quarterback there. So from a risk standpoint, I think it's very good. Briles obviously has a very, very high ceiling. He has put up some big numbers quickly at multiple places. So from that standpoint, being able to flip the script really quick, the downside to him, it only lasts about 3 years, you know, so new sheriff's in town, sticks around for 2 or 3 years, then bugs out. But I think in this day and age, every coach is just trying to survive. So if Beamer can get 2 or 3 really good years out of Briles and turn things into a more positive direction, I think we'd all take that. Clayton White, I think he's one of the more underrated guys in college football. And I think at South Carolina, it's easy to get hidden because in spite of Spurrier taking him to 10 wins, Spurrier still only averaged 7.5 wins a season in the regular season at South Carolina. And it's still a middle of the pack recruiter in the SEC. So, there's a lot of expectations at South Carolina, like there is at Arkansas. Really tough place to win. But I do like the pairing. I like the other guys they also brought in, running back coach, offensive line coach. I think the offense has a really good shot at South Carolina to turn around well this year. But again, 9 conference games plus Clemson, that is a really tough environment to turn a big ship quickly.
All right, last one, Dave. Missouri hired offensive coordinator Chip Lindsey. Missouri fans are happy to see Kirby Moore go. Or are they going to be regretting that?
I don't think they're going to be happy. I don't think they're going to be sad. Chip Lindsey is pretty average. He's had some a bad Chip Lindsey year, though. Everybody's getting fired. So there's a lot of risk on the downside. Upside, never really been elite at anything. So think Buster Faulkner with a really, really bad floor. you know, the ceiling's there, but Drinkwitz is a really good head coach, and he's going to be on the headset for the offense as well. So hopefully there's some transition there. But if you look at Chip Lindsey, his whole body of work as an offensive coordinator, I think your ceiling is slightly above average. I think your floor is everybody gets fired. So, you know, hopefully it's more on the good side, but there's a lot of risk in this hire of Chip Lindsey.
All right, Dave, man, I really appreciate you stopping by and dropping all this knowledge on the audience here. You got, you know, any information on how they could go over to your Patreon or what's the best way to support you and your work?
Actually, I got 2 websites right now. You can follow me on Twitter at CFB Matrix. You can shoot me a text if you got a question, comment, idea. My text line, 971-217-8419. My college football Patreon account, which is right now predominantly all coaching profiles. So if you join up and become a subscriber, text me and say, hey, Dave, I want you to profile this guy if he's not already in there. I can profile just about anybody in the country for my subscribers. On the NFL side, I've created an AI-driven NFL coach and game profiler, MatrixEdgeAI.com. That's only $5 a month, and that is everything NFL draft, which, Michael, if you want to talk about SEC in the draft, I'm going to be your guy. When you're ready to go SEC in the draft, I have right here in these AI agents, I have built in more data and can ask more questions about any position and any school and have it answered faster than you can imagine.
All right. Well, hey, we'll definitely have you back to discuss all that. And can't thank you enough. I know a busy time for you with the coaching stuff. So it means a lot that you took up all this time, and hopefully you didn't piss off too many people here.
Oh, reality can piss people off. Oh, and by the way, we might as well, while we're here, I think did we piss off everybody? Oklahoma needs a new offensive coordinator. Passing game only isn't working. We've proven that. Oh, Alabama. Just remember, Nick Saban is not walking through that door because he said, I can't be Nick Saban anymore, so I quit. So everybody that wants the glory days to come back, Nick quit because he couldn't be Nick anymore. Okay? He's like, I can't do what I want to do to win, and so I'm not doing this. So if you expect Kalen DeBoer or anybody to replicate what you had, you are doing it wrong. Relish the time and any championship you have going forward because the world's different, and that Saban era stuff is probably never coming back in your lifetime. There, I think we covered everybody.
Well, hey, let me ask you real quick a follow-up on Oklahoma because I've heard you say that, but it's they really got to get – you can't compete in this I know they just made the playoff, but I don't think you could compete annually in this conference if you can't run the football. Are they capable of doing that under this coordinator?
No, I don't believe so. See, this is one of the things that when they hired Arbuckle, look, our Arbuckle on our numbers was a rising star, right? But that was at Washington State. We didn't know if it was portable and it was pass driven. And if you look at 2024, by November, defenses were figuring it out. He regressed during the year. Still a really good mind and a play caller. But when you look at paper, on paper, you go Seth Luttrell, you go Ben Arbuckle, their play calling behaviors and what they do on first and second and third down inside their 20, inside 20 to 40, all these blocks, they look like the same guy. And our thought is in the SEC, you cannot be pass first and be successful without being a brilliant offensive coordinator. Mike Leach was semi-successful with it. Steve Spurrier was incredibly successful, but he ran the ball a lot more than people think. So I think with Oklahoma, you got to get back to more of a 55-45 run to pass ratio, not 40-60 pass ratio, because we've proven now for Brent Venables' tenure that is not working. They have got to figure out a way to run the football to be successful in this league, in my opinion.
Okay. Now, yeah, that'll get the Sooners going. So I do appreciate that.
Okay. I think that's everybody. Vanderbilt. Okay. Yeah. When Pavi is gone, that place is right back to bowl ineligible. So, you know, I'm not buying this Clark Lee BS of, wow, we've created something great here. Look, the recruiting is way up, but Pavi had to at least win 6 games on his own in the last couple of years. So, there.
What about, I don't think we've talked State at all. What, Jeff Lebby, is he the answer for them, you think?
Look, it's a tough situation right now. You know, they upgraded their defensive coordinator a year too late. Arnett has a decent ceiling. He had one good year that was solidly above average. Everything else is average or below average, but it was still a significant upgrade. You do have your quarterback coming back, but Lebby has only really had one good year out of 4 calling plays. You know, his first year at Oklahoma, first or second year at Oklahoma, one of those was bad. First year at State was bad. So a great quarterback developer, 100% agree on that. But again, 9 games, new defensive coordinator. Feels like when you hire a defensive coordinator in year 3, everything going on, the seat's pretty hot. It's a tough road for State, given that they were the number one team in the country, not more than what was it? 7 years ago, 8 years ago, it might be another long season for the Arkansas, Kentucky's, and Mississippi States of the year going into this 9-game schedule.
Oh, hey, one last thing. This will get everybody on your side before you go here. Chad Morris to Clemson. You just did a write-off.
Oh, my God, dude. The buddy hire returns. Oh, it's so funny because why do you think a guy who hasn't called plays in 11 years is the answer? Why do you think a guy that at Auburn, the last time he called plays, was talent adjusted the 76th best offense in the country? The last time he called plays at Clemson, he was 101st best scoring efficiency offense, talent adjusted for defense faced. He had one really good year at Clemson. Everything else has been regression. I am absolutely 100% betting against Chad Morris and the Clemson offense in 2026.
Well, maybe have you considered, I don't know what Dabo's buyout is, but maybe he's coaching for the buyout.
Could be. Could be. Restart somewhere else. I just, you know, it was an incredible run that they had when you look at everything that happened in Clemson, probably the most incredible run of the last 30 years in college football. But he hasn't been able to find the magic. And hiring guys that used to have it for a little bit based on, but then a lot of people are saying money. They paid $1.2 million. For him to come back. And I'm like, why don't you go get a Mike Yurcich, who's portable, who's proven to put up top 25 offenses for that kind of money. I think they panicked. I think they went with the buddy hire, and I think it's going to end poorly for them at Clemson.
Okay. Well, there you got it from the man himself, Dave Bartu. Thank you so much. And I can't wait to have you back on here in the near future.
Yes, sir.